Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian, and our guest today is Natalie Ortega. Hello.
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. What are you reading these days?
These days,
These days.
I'm actually reading, I'm trying to read a lot more. I just read Call Me by Your Name. I was a huge fan of the movie, got into the book, which I loved even more, which is not usually what happens when I read them in that order. And you know what else I'm reading? I'm reading The Creative Act. Have you ever read that? So it's not like a fiction, it's not like a novel, but it's a book about like creativity and how like our minds work in a creative way and not quite a business way, but how the whole model of if you want that to be your life has to be kind of more regimented than the way your mind works. And it's all about kind of just like the psychology of that. And it's been
Oh my
really,
gosh.
really interesting. I highly recommend it to anybody who creates anything.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I'm going to get that immediately.
It's really, really good.
Our book today is from 2005 by Scott Westerfeld, Uglies. What's your story with this book? How did it come into your life?
The chokehold that this series had on me was so unparalleled. I also think because I was like 11 when this book came out, so I think I read it in like sixth or seventh grade. And I wasn't like a huge reader when I was a kid, other than Harry Potter, which I was obsessed with. Everything kind of like bored me, like all the school stuff. And then I read this book and I was like, oh, it was like the original Katniss. She's just like this, like, she's doing all these like cool, like adventures. It's slightly futuristic, which was also like really cool because I didn't have a cell phone yet, so everything that she like had in these books was like wild to me. I think I read them like as they were coming out, which there are very few series that I haven't been able to just like binge if I'm reading a series. Like this one was one where I would like wait, I would go to the bookstore with my mom and she'd get me this book. And I remember it as being like the first series other than Harry Potter, which kind of like was a whole family event that I like would wait at the bookstore to go pick up.
I love that you mentioned Hunger Games because, so I never read this book when I was growing up. It was there, like I saw it, I knew it, but I never read it. And reading it the whole time, I was like, this is very Hunger Games. This is 3 years earlier than Hunger Games, which really surprised
It
me.
is, and it's written by a man,
Correct.
which we can chat about this later. You can tell.
I
And I didn't catch that when I was 11, but when I reread it last week, you could tell.
Yeah, there were a lot of. When I picked up this book and I was like, oh, it's written by a man, every single time I do that, and maybe it's not very feminist of me treating the genders equally, but I am like, I don't know if I trust you to really capture the nuance of young girlhood.
That's the thing, right? Is like I don't really pay attention to whether or not there's a difference between male writers and female writers when I'm reading a story, but I just remember so many of the like characters that you root for in this series are women. Like all the cool characters are young women, and when I picked it back up, I went, "This was written by a guy? Interesting." And then the only thing that was like a dead giveaway right away was the dialogue. 'Cause he's writing about an age, right? 14, 15. Before boys and girls are really talking to each other. So I'm like, you never talk to a girl that's that age. Like, you've never heard a girl that age speak. So it's actually the only parts that kind of took me out of it or made me like super like aware that I was reading a man's writing was when he's writing dialogue of teenage girls. I was like, we would never say that.
Absolutely. I liked that you mentioned that you didn't have a cell phone back then because I was looking at 2005. What is this world? Bush starts a second term, Katrina happens, YouTube launches.
Yes, there was a family computer.
Yes.
That was the, yeah.
There was a computer room.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And oh, also, the 2005 is the first ever successful human face transplant.
Why is this actually a fact that I feel like I knew at the time? Like, I feel like we all talked about this. Was somebody mauled by something?
Oh, I don't know. It was a French woman. I think her name was like Isabelle
No,
Denoir or something.
I can picture her
But
in my mind's eye. I
now I have to
do
look.
recall that.
But the whole that just blew my mind. Yes. Oh my gosh. After her Labrador retriever
Yes.
crossbreed mauled
A
her.
Labrador? The nicest dog ever. It's like being like, when her little bunny rabbit ripped her face off.
it's a
I
French
remember
Labrador
that. And this
somehow.
is truly about that. They talk about
It.
taking your face off, restructuring your bones, and putting your face back on.
Yes. Uglies is a post-apocalyptic series set 300 years in the future where, at the age of 16, everyone gets cosmetic surgery to become like mutually agreed upon standard of beauty.
And you know what I found interesting rereading this book is, you know, when you like read something and kind of gloss over a detail or take in a detail and think you know what it was, and then you reread something and you're like, oh man. It's like when people read The Hunger Games and missed the part where they said Rue was black. She's
Yeah.
black in the book. And then everyone was mad that she was black in the movie. It's like they told you. I always thought that the main character was like some sort of Asian descent because they talk about the shape of her eyes.
Yes.
And they say she has almond-shaped eyes, which I always thought was indicative of some sort of like maybe an Asian mix. We're in the future, people, and then they talk about, well, Joey King is going to play her in the movie,
Yes.
so either they ignored the fact that she's Asian, or maybe she's not, and I read that wrong. But they talk about, and this is actually funny as far as like timeline goes too. They talk about the fact that they make everyone the same skin color. Because in history, people used to fight over having different colored skin. And the skin color they make them is white. They lighten everybody's skin, which is funny because a few years later, in like the 2010s, Time magazine did that thing of being like, in 300 years, this is what all of society will look like. And it's the most beautiful mixed person you've ever seen in your life.
Indeed.
And I was just like, well, yeah, obviously that's the most beautiful person. Why are we all looking like the Europeans with their pasty, pasty skin? I mean, you and I can't do much talking in that department, but it was just
Tasty
very
greens.
interesting reading it now
Yes.
and being like, oh, that's what they decided, that everyone would be white.
Yeah, I feel like that being charitable to dear old Scott, I feel like obviously this is a flawed system that they are existing in, and the process of the books is our protagonist Tally. The plot is a little back and forth. Tally is about to turn pretty. She's like, thank God. Her friend runs
3 months
away.
away.
Friend runs away, says, I don't want to do this. I'm going to the woods.
This woods, this camp in the woods where people can live ugly.
Yes, thank gosh. And she is taken by the head of what is basically like the CIA, sort of, in their version. And is like, we will not turn you pretty unless you go walk for 2 weeks in the woods to find your friend and then use this locket to tell us where they are and we'll come get them and then you can become pretty. And then she decides that actually true beauty is in the eye of the beholder and conformity is
She
that.
finds a boy out there, which I has a
She
big, and you know what? No shade on Scott or not that. Like, if I found out like a naturally decently hot dude in the woods who was like, there's a different way of life, I'd be like, yes, there is, King. Like, I would ditch too.
Oh yeah, at 16. Oh my gosh.
Kidding? Are you kidding? David would have turned my world upside down.
Exactly.
Let's see
And
this out. Let's see what's going on.
let's
But
see
then
what
she
happens.
Fs it up by accident.
Yeah, this is just, I don't want to be like, damn, this 16-year-old is stupid.
Just bury the locket, bury it. She burns it.
She burns it. She throws it in the fire because we love drama.
Don't wait, Scott. Our boy Scott loves the drama.
But of course they know where you are. Like, of course. And throwing it in the fire brings the CIA to their location immediately, and they all get taken away, and she has to break them back out, and then she breaks them back out and decides, no, I have to go back in after going out, after coming back
Well,
in.
because a huge detail here is
Yes.
that when they get taken by the CIA adjacent, I think it's called like Special
Yes.
Shay, her new best friend who decided that she never wanted to be pretty, was turned pretty.
And she loves it.
Well, she has no, they messed up her mind. That's part of the operation, you find out, is they adjust your brain to be docile to the government and to be happy and really kind of dumb, which honestly, hear me out. Give it to me, babe.
Yeah.
Oh my God, give it to me, babe. And I think this is actually a very interesting, I'm going to give our boy Scott some props here, a
Go
really
for it.
interesting conversation on feminism, because there are these two girls who we're supposed to identify in different ways with and like understand where each of them is coming from, but they have a really hard time understanding each other, even though they never really seem to lose respect for each other, which I think is really
Yeah.
wise of 16-year-olds, maybe a little too wise for 16-year-olds. But one is not wanting to change her appearance. And she's like, I just want to be who I am. And this other girl is just like, I just want to be beautiful. And that's going to make me happy. And I was like, yeah, girl. Like, I do think that the end of this book is trying to tell us that, like, she realized that that's a fake dream. And it's like, no, I think it's okay if she just wants to be beautiful and like dumb and happy. Like, straight up, if that was my choice, I'd be like considering it.
I think maybe that's a hard part about revisiting these books as an adult. There's
Yes.
this moment where her friend has run away. It's very early on in the book, and the CIA, the specials, bring her in and say, like, tell us where your friend is, and we'll give you the treatment right away. And she deliberates for a few days. And I, as a reader in my late 20s, was like, girl, do it. Like, betray those kids, get the
You
surgery.
barely know her. She's been your friend for like 2 months, girl.
Get rid of her.
2 months. Also, then they'd find them, they'd all turn pretty, and none of them would be mad because you don't have any brain cells to be mad. You're just happy
Exactly.
all the time. This is within the first, like, truly 10 pages of the book. When she, Tally, the protagonist, is still ugly and sneaks into New Pretty Town to, like, find her friend who turned pretty before her. When she's describing what's going on there, and it just happens every day, I'm like, duh, that sounds so much better than having a job.
It
Like,
is a Gatsby party all day, every
all
day.
day, every day, but like in the future, like
Yes.
Gatsby, but like you have a bunch of gadgets. And I'm just like, 100%.
It is, especially 2005, it is Gatsby meets like GoGo Gadget. It is, dear listeners, I cannot emphasize enough how important bungee jump backpacks are
I
in
was
this
just gonna bring that
story.
up and I was like, don't keep talking. Don't keep talking. The way so many lives would be saved in metropolitan areas if we just had bungee backpacks to get out of fires, other emergencies that humans cause. I'm not going to say it on here, but I think we all need a bungee backpack.
For planes,
Tell me about it.
oh
The
my gosh,
hoverboards, come on. And
yes,
you know what? I do like that it is realistic future where it's not just like, and this is a hoverboard. It's like there needs to be some sort of metal to like offset the magnet. So the city is built on a grid, like a literal metal grid, and they can like fly it over the river because there's metallic minerals in the river. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you.
Which also feels like I remember fifth grade science class where it felt like for half the year we were just like maglev transportation, like magnetic levitation transportation is the way of the future.
Yeah.
And it was just like, look at these magnets repel each other. This is everything. But like you said, he really, I just want to get to know Scott more because I was looking on his website and there's not, first off, he loves the New York Liberty WNBA team.
Okay. Actually, I do
But
love that about him.
I do
I
too.
know
I
nothing
really
about
do.
them, but I do love that he loves them.
He has a wife who's Australian, who's a writer,
I
and
knew he was straight. I
yeah.
knew he was straight.
Didn't you, Jess?
Didn't he
Yeah.
just? If a gay man wrote this book, I'd be like, yes, that's how 16-year-olds speak to each
Queen.
other.
Exactly. Oh, there's something about the naming conventions in this book that are. Yeah, we can come back to that. But I feel like Scott really thinks a lot about like the mechanics of the world. Like you said, with these hoverboards and one of the big ideas behind the pretty surgery is, like you said in one of the first pages, it says the big eyes and lips said, I'm young and vulnerable. I can't hurt you and you want to protect me. And the rest said, I'm healthy. I won't make you sick. And no matter how you felt about a pretty, there was a part of you that thought, if we had kids, they'd be healthy too. I want this pretty person. It was biology, they said at school. You couldn't help believing all these things. I thought that was really an interesting perspective, especially, I mean, just how often in terms of talking about trans kids and non-binary kids, people say, well, it's biology. And it's like, well, science is always changing.
That is true, because there's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
We're still dying trying to get to the bottom of the ocean. That's embarrassing. But another thing that I thought was interesting that I thought he didn't clarify, but then halfway through the book, before she leaves, he kind of does, is the family dynamic of it all.
Yeah.
Because everybody's turned pretty, but when they have children, they're born natural. So they're born ugly and they're
Ugly.
called
Yeah.
littlies. And they live in the not in New Pretty Town, but in the more adult pretty areas with their parents. And then when they're 12 years old,
You turn ugly.
they move into a dorm in Uglyville. That's what it's called. But I was like, oh, that's so sad they get ripped from their parents. And then I was like, well, not really. It's like boarding school or like college. And you're
Yeah.
there for 4 years and then you're back. But it's so funny that they're like, you hit puberty and now you're too ugly.
It is so hilarious that you turn 12 and they're like, you are so ugly. We need to send you to a special town
Town.
so that we don't have to look at your ugly face.
100%. But their dorm's still pretty cool. Like it
Yeah.
still has like high-tech gadgets and stuff.
And one last world building detail that I love, you get three pretty surgeries throughout your life. So there are like stages to maintain it, keep it up. And it's an important thing that later on, we mentioned this, later on, we discovered that in changing your face, they also give you like brain lesions, like you said, to become docile. When you are old but still pretty, they call you crumbly and they put you in a town called Crumblyville.
He really didn't think twice about what he named these places. He really said, don't need to proofread that. That's what I want.
I think one thing that I really learned from this book is, oh, we treat old people pretty poorly in terms of how we
Yeah.
talk about their looks. That was something that really jarred me.
100%.
'Cause she meets a 40-year-old at some point and she's like, this is the ugliest thing I've
Ugly.
ever seen in my I want to vomit.
Also, I love that, like, it's not told from Tally's point of view. It's written from the third person. And so everybody is described. Like everybody's described in more detail than any other person's described in any other book that you've ever read. And it's funny when they describe Shay, everything she's saying about her, I'm like, sounds like she's pretty. They're like,
Yes.
she's so skinny and tall. And then she also has the fullest lips you've ever seen on an ugly person. And it's like, oh, she sounds all right. It sounds like if she was in our normal times, she would get picked up at a bar 10 times out of 10. Tally says, well, okay, so if we go to this place, everybody's ugly. And Shay goes, which means nobody's ugly. And I'm like, oh, you just know you're going to be the hottest one there. She just knows she's going to be the hottest piece in the smoke.
Which is what the mystery place is called. I love that because it felt so gratingly 2005 every time they
Yes.
described Shay because they're like, she's too skinny.
Yeah,
And
it's
I'm
the
like,
heroin chic era.
I think it frustrated me because I was like, Scott, you know that in the world that we live in today, looking like you're on your deathbed
A slay.
is attractive, is
Yeah.
pretty.
But that's a man writing about it. That's a man writing about a 16-year-old girl who is shaped like a teenage boy, which, again, by our societal standards, we're like, put her on a magazine cover. But for him, as a man, he's like, that's disgusting.
I feel like he had to do some sort of like course correction of being like, well, we know everyone wants to be skinny, but that's bad. So we make
Right. We have to make them look
skinny
healthy. They say healthy a bunch of times.
so much.
They love
Yes.
saying how healthy the pretties look.
Yes. And the specials are cruel, is the word that keeps being used because they get the surgery, but not the brain lesions.
Which that actually sounds miserable to
Oh my
me.
God.
You get to watch all these
Yeah.
other people being like dopey and happy. Ugh, burn my brain, babe. Burn
And
it.
you're in like the first responders roles. So
Right.
you are the person being like, oh, this guy forgot to put on his bungee backpack because he was so blasted, and now it's my job.
In the Uglies book, the specials are what Julianne Moore is to the Hunger Games.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Beautiful, cunning. You never know what they're thinking. They're very scary. You have to do what they say. But the whole time they're like, this is for your own good.
Your own
This is
good.
for you. And it's like, that feels like a lie.
Yeah, I think that was something really jarring was sort of this attitude of paternalism. Like, there's a moment when the specials finally arrive in the smoke to come get everyone, and Tally's trying to run away. And the special is sort of like, it's described as like a teacher sort of looking at all these kids running around her classroom, just being like, come on, why can't you just like get it together, kids? And I think things like calling them uglies and pretties and littlies and crumblies all felt very kind of like, obviously I read it, it was like, that's a dumb thing. That's a dumb name convention. Blah, blah. But it was
Yeah.
like, oh, well, maybe there's actually something to it of like, we're purposefully trying to make things seem a little silly so that you, if you're there being like, the pretties are gonna get us, you're like, oh, you can hear
Yeah.
yourself and be like, this sounds a little
This
silly.
sounds silly. Yeah, I also think like everything right in this world is tailored to the experience of the pretty person.
Absolutely.
And making that attractive to everybody who isn't yet pretty. And I think those people This world is like tailored and imagined for them. And so those people don't have like the brain capacity for much more than these like
True.
base level observations and classifications. And so I do think it's intentional, but it is a little bit, it does take you out every time you read something like that where you're like, oh.
Crumbly. I can't. I have to stop acting like I didn't adore Crumblyville. It's a favorite part. I have to stop doing that.
I think I'd love it there.
I mean, yeah, and you're on your third brain surgery. You are just hanging out.
Just kill me. Just kill
It's
me. Not my third brain surgery.
I know. But I think I was interested in this sort of anti-conformity message that came through it because I think that did feel very. I think like Hunger Games felt almost a little too. Hunger Games had lessons that like culturally we were not yet ready for. And I
Sure.
think this hit at a degree of like conformity is bad. Find the uniqueness in you. That
Yeah.
felt like very much a message I was getting a lot. I wanted to ask, like, was this like big with your friends or was this just you?
Yes, my friends read this book. I definitely cared way more about it. Like, this was my series when I was a kid. But it's funny, we read this like in middle school. I remember two book series that me and my friends read pretty intensely. And it was this, and it was Pretty Little Liars before it was a television show. And these two book series could not be more different. And I would say they liked Pretty Little Liars better.
Ooh.
And I was more into this one. I was
And
also, dare I say, and my friends would all agree that at that point in our lives, I was a little smarter. Like I was like the nerdy one. I was like not even in like a cool way. Like I was like the one who like did all her homework and everyone's like, stop doing all that because then they'll expect us to do it. So I did read Pretty Little Liars. I liked it, but this was definitely the one that I hung on to.
Man, I'm surprised Pretty Little Liars has not come up before on this podcast. It absolutely
I
should.
was gonna ask to do that one, but I felt like the show I watched religiously, and it's so different from the books, but I have watched the show so religiously that I truly don't think even if I reread that first book, I would be able to separate, like remember what was what, because that show was so problematic and so like ingrained in my DNA.
I mean, a huge cultural moment.
It ran for like 8 seasons. Also, Pretty Little Liars was like it was. I don't think it was ever meant to. It was on ABC Family, right? Or
Yes.
CW, ABC Family.
ABC Family.
The only relationship that started season one and lasted through to the final episode was the teacher-student relationship.
No, I was
That
afraid of that.
other than the first episode where they find out that's a teacher-student relationship, everybody's like pretty about it. I didn't question that for a second when I was in high school. That's crazy. They're like, the actor's the same age. It's like, that's not what you're telling us, babe. We're not watching them. We're not.
No. Oh man, that really, if you weren't there for the days when it was ABC Family, I mean, like
What is it now, Freeform?
Freeform. The content on that network was so wide-ranging because that's also Secret Life of the American Teen. There
Was it
was,
Seventh
yeah.
Heaven on
Oh, I
ABC
believe
Family?
it.
Maybe not, but that was way older.
And that was definitely a lot of reruns. There was a 10 Things I Hate About You
Oh,
TV
yes, with
show.
Amanda Bynes.
No, with
Yes, I promise you, she was in that show.
10 Things I Hate About You?
I'm looking at it right now.
Or was she in with Jenny McCarthy? What I Like About You?
That was it.
Two shows
That was it.
that should maybe not exist at the same time with such similar
No.
titles.
Yeah, that's true. Very confusing. That's not my fault.
10 Things I Hate About You ran for one season and it had the girl from Ned's Declassified on it. And that's why I watched it.
Mo?
And yes.
She's interesting. Do you listen to their podcast?
Every once in a
She
while.
stresses me out, man. She was also on Pretty Little Liars for like
Yes.
5 seasons. Apparently, they had a very hard time with her on that show from
Yeah.
her words about herself. Yes.
Yeah. But ultimately, I think what links all of these in my head is there is an Uglies movie coming out in like 6 weeks.
It's been being made since like 2020.
The book came out 2005. The movie got optioned 2006. Development hell for 15 years.
That's insane.
Gets shot, I think, in 2021, starring Joey King, and is coming out 2024.
You know who else it's starring?
Laverne Cox.
Yes, but you know who else it's
Who
starring?
else?
And it doesn't say on IMDb what role he's playing, but so Chase Stokes, look him up, get a picture of his face. If he's playing David, it is the most brilliant casting. I've never seen a hot person look almost ugly so much as him.
That's a hot
Kristen,
person.
no, babe, scroll all the pictures. He is a hot person, like undoubtedly, that's a
From
hot person.
Outer Banks.
But his face is like a little weird. And I say that with all due respect to Chase Stokes. I think he is perfect casting if he plays David.
Maybe if they get him real
Dirty.
scarred and scruffed up, yeah.
Yeah. I think he has full potential to be
Interesting.
like guy in the woods hot, which is what
Yes.
David is. I think Joey King is love her. I think she'll be fabulous in it. The wrong choice. These characters are so young.
Yes,
They're
they
hiring people
are.
in their like well into their 20s, not like early 20s. They're hiring like late 20s people
Yeah.
playing these roles.
Although when I heard an hour ago that Joey King was playing Tally and that the movie was filmed in 2021, I was like, from a business standpoint, that is brilliant. Like to have
Yeah.
the kissing booth and all of that completely makes sense. But yeah, I just, okay.
Also, if they're making it a whole series, right? It's like,
Again, from a business perspective, that would make most sense. I mean, they have four
right.
novels and then they have four more novels and graphic novels
Right.
and
Do you know if this is a theatrical release or if it's a streamer?
oh, I expect it's just a streamer. I feel like
Yeah.
if it was going to be a theatrical release, we would have
We'd have
had.
heard. Yeah, we would have heard more about it. Well, I shall be watching.
I wasn't interested, and then I heard Laverne Cox was in it, and I was like, oh, how are we going to talk about trans people in this world?
She's gotta be playing one of the specials.
Ooh.
She's objectively too beautiful to play anybody in that other world.
Yes, that's true.
Unless she's playing, because aren't David's parents, even though they're living in the woods, aren't they pretties?
Yes, they had at least one surgery, I think. It's such a fun moment where Tally's like, you two look somehow similar. You
Yeah.
father and son. I don't like this.
Yeah.
This is.
But I feel like Laverne Cox has like a really like commanding,
Exactly.
like if she spoke, I would listen. And I bet that she's playing like one of the specials.
That makes complete sense. You're
Doctor,
so right.
what's the name, doctor's name? Doctor Cable, I think.
Yes, exactly.
I bet you that's Laverne Cox. I'm gonna
Oof.
watch it. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to at
Now
least
that I've
pop it all
reread it,
on.
I remember how potently important it was to me as a child. So I'm kind of bummed that it took this long for a movie to be made because I think I would have been like really souped on it if it came out when I was like in high school or even in college.
Had this like gotten the same treatment as Hunger Games, Twilight, Divergent, it would have, I
Right.
mean, it came out exactly in the right moment. It's really like whoever was in the development hell. I've worked in development, it is hell, but someone there
Yeah.
dropped the ball. Like
Bad. Yeah.
this should not have
Taken this long.
lingered, hung out on that shelf too long.
Yeah. But they picked the right people for young kids to be
Oh my
interested
gosh.
in it, like Chase Stokes, who's on Outer
Outer
Banks,
Banks,
and
yes.
Joey King. Like, this is going to make people read a book that kids probably don't read anymore.
Oh yeah. I remembered this cover so
I
clearly.
was gonna say, so I have it here. It's propping up my mic, so I can't show you, but it's
Is
a
it like the
new.
green
Oh, it's
or
coming to
the.
Netflix. No, so yes, it says it on my book. The book now is like a very different cover, but the book originally was green and it had half of Tally's face and just like her eye. And she, I'll say it, looked beautiful. And they're like, this ugly, ugly trash girl. And she's like, obviously pretty. And then the second book was pink and had half of her face beautiful and her eyes like a brighter color.
Your current version, is it like the blue cover where it's
It's
like
a blue cover with a girl
fractured?
in, yes, and a girl in
Yeah.
profile. Yeah.
I got the ebook and I really think that cover is very pretty, but when I
Yes.
post about it, I will be posting the
The
green
original cover.
one, of
Yes. That's
course.
iconic. Like, even if you didn't read it, you saw somebody reading that book.
Exactly. It was everywhere and it was thick. Is my memory of it chunky?
Also, something that I remember, anybody who has the original of these books, they're somewhere in my mom's house. And I remember getting it and being like, oh, this feels so nice. The original book had like a glossed cover on it, like a soft, the soft cover had a gloss cover. When you got the second book, Pretties, it had a matte, that matte cover. And I was like, I don't know if that was a choice or if that was just like an intentional choice, I mean. But I remember being like, oh, this book is nicer because it has this matte cover. You know what I'm saying? Where it almost feels
You're
like
scaling
silicone.
up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, Oh, this pretty book has a prettier cover. I want to find those originals. My original Uglies book is tattered, absolutely tattered.
Love that. Those are the best, though.
Yeah, held together by a spot of glue and a prayer.
There are all these little things of like she's talking to Shay and she goes like, "You've gained weight. It suits you." And of course, Shay scowled. She hated being called stick insect or pig eyes or any of the other things uglies call one
Pig
another.
eyes.
Never
If
have I
someone called
heard.
me that, I would report them to the police.
Oh my gosh.
What does that even mean? I'm trying to like picture what it means. Also, this is random. This is a side note, but the book starts with Tally going into New Pretty Town to meet up with her friend Paris, not Paris, which I hate that choice. Paris,
With an E.
who became pretty, his birthday was 3 months before hers. It's like kind of unclear at first. Like they say they're best friends, but then it becomes clear that she like has a crush on him and has seen him date other girls and always, tried to push it away and like blah, blah, blah. But you really don't know almost anything about Paris
Absolutely.
until the very end of this book, and then really very much the second book. But it within the first 15 pages, she goes to this party and like to go see him. And they're like the kind of friends that have like scarred their hands in a blood pact and all this stuff. And his scar was removed, and he's not happy to see her. And he makes her promise she won't come back, which he says is because he wants her to be pretty in a few months so that they can be friends again. And she asks him, "We're still best friends, right?" And he says, and I quote, "Yeah, sure, forever, in 3 months." If a man, oh my gosh, who is that?
Sorry, this is my kitten Bear. She's here to cause
Bear!
problems.
She's so beauty. Look at those eyeballs.
We're thinking about renaming her Baby Town.
Baby Town?
Baby Town or Magnetron.
You should name her Crumbly Town.
Yeah,
Crumblyville. Is my cat Crumblyville? Yeah, if a
absolutely.
man said that to me, first of all, if a friend said that to me, I'd be like, clarification, please.
Yes.
But that is the most crushing. Like 16 is like kind of when I had my first like heartbreak. And that I think was, that is so, when I had read the book, I was like much younger than that. I don't think I grasped the gravity of that moment. And rereading it, I was like, oh my God, that hurts my chest to read that. That's really sad. But also, what's so funny about it is that this has been her best friend her whole life, probably her first love, whether she told him about it or not. And then the second she meets this dude in the forest, she's like, "Who?" And I'm like, that's the most honest. Scott got that one right. That is the most
You did.
honest, because it's like she was so down bad for this other dude. She met another dude in the woods for like 45 seconds and was like, "I love that guy. I'm gonna ditch my life plan to be reunited with my family, my best friend, and my first love for this man I met in the woods." And I think that that's really honest of him.
It is. And before I forget, this is something I did love from Scott's website. There's like an about me page that he clearly was like, somebody keeps emailing me, so I have to do this. And one part was like, my proudest accomplishment. And he goes, well, it's a, of course, it's the three Powerpuff Girls Choose Your Own Adventure books I've written, which I loved. Me too, Scott.
No.
I think they're out of print.
Does he have to pay for the rights to that? Like, are you allowed to?
They hired him, I believe.
Okay. I thought this was just like a fan project he was doing for the Powerpuff Girls. And I was like, oof. And somebody married him. Good for him. Like, that's funny. I love that that was not my first thought. And my first thought was this man wrote fan novels and published them until he got in trouble. I also really love the idea that someone went onto his website, not from this extremely successful, like best-selling series that he wrote, but like read one of his Choose Your Own Adventure Powerpuff Girls books and was like, "I gotta know more about Scott. I'm thirsty for more info."
He has a like alternate history of World War II series that's a Netflix anime next year. So
Okay.
it seems like someone got a real good contract between Scott and Netflix. And for that,
Yeah. Well, good for Scott.
exactly.
Also, that's just like, and I'm sure that you can relate to this as well, as someone on that side of this business, so as like an actor and a writer, where you're like counting on other people to either make your stuff or employ you in their stuff. The idea that when that book was optioned in 2006, right after it had had like probably a monster year, he was probably like, "Hell yeah, my life's about to change." And then it got shelved for 15 years. Like
Yeah.
the way this business is such trash. That's so interesting and so disheartening.
Yeah. I remember right after the strike ended, I get this email newsletter every business day that I signed up for because a college professor yelled at everyone to do this. And I was like,
Oh
you
God, we
know
always had to do one of those. Everyone had
what?
to do one of those.
And so I was like, the professor who yelled at everyone to do it really is my mom. So I was like, for her, I'll do it. And after the strike ended, there was a headline that was like, even though the Nurse Ratched show was renewed for season two, it's canceled and we're not doing season two. And it's been like that for like 4 years that they've been waiting to shoot this season that they've already bought. Imagine thinking for 4 years you have a job lined up and then it just vanishes.
But I think this all ties together in Watch Me Do It.
Hell yeah.
And it's about timing, right? And adaptation. But with things like the Wicked movie being made 20 years later, like that's what I think, like when the Rent movie was made, which personally for me, I thought was astonishing. Critics did not agree, but it was made too soon. It was made 10 years after it opened on Broadway. It was still running on Broadway, which Wicked is different. Wicked is like, is never going to close. Rent is a little bit more of a niche show. You can't bring families to see Rent, you
That's
know?
true.
And even though it was a massive blockbuster as well, but that movie came too soon. And I think that they waited for the right time to make Wicked and the right people to be in Wicked. And I think that that movie is going to be fantastic. And I do think that, like we said, even though it was shelved for 15 years, this Uglies movie is now being so intentionally made with the cast they're choosing. The fact that it's on streaming and not in theaters is actually a really smart choice because the age group of people that are going to see it are going to have access to streaming and not being taken to the movie theaters to like go see this movie. So I actually think it's set up for success. I haven't seen almost any
No.
marketing or advertising for it. So I'm interested to see what kind of like numbers it does, but I bet you it's going to be like the front thing on Netflix when it comes
Oh,
out.
yeah. I mean, Netflix loves Joey King and they've gotten so
They
much.
love her
They love
for
her.
good reason. She's fantastic.
I didn't really know of her until Kissing Booth happened, which was through Netflix.
She
And
was a
I.
Ramona and Beezus girlie. She's been acting since she's been a baby.
Now, when is someone going to pick Ramona and Beezus on this podcast?
Great, great, great book. She was also, fun fact, Joey King, the star of Taylor Swift's Mean music video in 2011.
I feel
She
like
was
I
the little
know
girl.
that.
Yeah.
Why do you have to be so mean?
Why do you have to be so mean? But Joey King has had an excellent and very meticulously curated career.
Yes.
She and her team are very smart. She made a really
Absolutely.
good transition to adult, being an adult artist. Did you see her in the act?
I saw tiny bits. The act was shot in around Savannah. So I know a lot
Oh,
of people
nice.
who were like PAs or like,
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
yeah.
I mean, she was obviously fantastic. She won Golden Globe, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Or an Emmy, one of the two. I think
I
it was
think,
Golden.
yeah, I think won the Golden Globe, maybe got an Emmy nomination.
Yeah, but yeah, she's fantastic. So if any, I do think with these kind of things, and this is what I will give, I know people like had this weird moment with Anne Hathaway where they decided we didn't like her anymore. And they did the same thing to Jennifer Lawrence where they decided she was irritating and we didn't like her anymore. Like, God forbid women are earnest. Like, I can't handle it. But I think what this movie is going to require to honor the book series and also to be like successful and not cringy is people who are going to earnestly like throw their whole back into it. And that's what I thought, I remember when Jennifer Lawrence got cast in The Hunger Games and I was like, this is a horrible choice because I thought she was too old. She looked like a woman already.
Yeah, that's true.
And this was supposed to be like a girl. I saw Jennifer Lawrence. I was like, she is hot. She is fit. She can definitely win the Hunger Games. Like, I was like, that queen can, she's 5'10". Like, she can win the Hunger Games. But what I did love about her, she's so fantastic in those movies. There was no amount of eye roll in it, which I do think, and I love her. I love her. I love her. I love her. Kristen Stewart gave us a little bit of eye roll in all of the Twilight movies. Queenie Pop didn't want to be there.
She didn't.
And while she's still iconic and those movies are still fantastic, they really forced Taylor Lautner to carry the whole burden of being earnest in those films. And I think when you're making this kind of movie, if you're signing on to it, you have to accept that it's going to be a little bit cringe and you have to put your whole back into it.
I had never thought of Taylor Lautner like that. And
He saved those films. People made fun of him because he was so like earnest in those movies. And I'm like, first of all, they were making so much money. So to step on set and roll your eyes, which Robert Pattinson admittedly did, he'll talk about it. He would roll his eyes the whole time in vibe and visually. And Taylor Lautner put his whole back into being earnest and honest in those movies. And I give him a lot of credit for that.
When you have that dynamic on set, it is hard to be Taylor Lautner and to
Yes.
still be like, this is
And
incredible.
it's hard to be the only one doing it when the movie comes out, because then people are like,
Yeah.
LOL at that guy. But it's like, if you're cashing the check, I'm like, if you think it's really cringy, don't do the movie. I get it. Robert Pattinson was doing a movie for kids when he's like this truly unbelievable actor. So is Kristen Stewart. And they're like, this is beneath me. Then don't cash the check, babe. Then you can't cash the check.
Exactly.
Be the Taylor Lautner.
Exactly.
I rewatched those movies recently, and I rewatched The Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games movies, everyone is putting their back into it. Josh Hutcherson, God bless him.
Yeah.
Fantastic actor, put his whole 5'7" self into that movie. Sweet little.
And the thing that makes them different is that Josh Hutcherson and Jennifer Lawrence are both from Kentucky.
They are. I think Taylor Lautner is from like Massachusetts. No,
Something like that.
Michigan, Michigan. Because Taylor Swift sings about it in a song because they dated. He's from Michigan, but he was Shark Boy. He's been acting since he was a kid. Truly, I'm so happy. There's been like kind of a Taylor Lautner renaissance the last year or so because, give credit where credit's due, Miss Swift did her Taylor's Versions re-releases. And
Oh.
he was the boyfriend she had when she did Speak Now. And so she invited him and his wife to be in her music video.
His wife, also Taylor.
Also, Taylor Lautner.
Also Taylor Lautner.
Everyone's like, oh, he's so hot and unproblematic. And I was like, I've been saying this for years. And I'm glad Mr. Taylor Lautner is getting his moment in the sun, but I'm pissed that it took so long for people to be kind to him. And the same thing, Jennifer Lawrence is getting her moment back, and Anne Hathaway is getting her moment back. But it's so annoying that people punish people for being earnest. And it's like, they're just theater kids. You're just mad because they're theater
Yeah.
kids.
Joey King, Kissing Booth, Jacob Elordi also had that Robert Pattinson kind of mindset, from what I
And he's talked
recall.
about regretting doing those movies. And it's like,
Yeah.
why? It's why you have a career.
Exactly. Yeah.
You could be working a boring job. You were in like two movies, right? Two or three. And then you did Euphoria. Like, you are fine, babe.
Exactly. Played Elvis. And that's the thing. Like, you can't get to Elvis without
Unless you did the
doing.
Kissing Booth.
I mean, Austin Butler was on Disney Channel. Like,
Yeah, and he's
there.
not talking smack. That's why I also love people like Vanessa Hudgens and Zac Efron, because he put his whole back into those movies, those High School Musical movies. And is he the best actor we have to our name? No, but he's great, and he continues to work on a lot more serious projects than High School Musical. But he's not afraid to go back and do The Greatest Showman and be like,
Exactly.
"Yeah, I love doing that." And he says, "That was the greatest time of my life. It gave me a career." And it's like, "Thank you."
Yeah. And now he's doing, I think Joey King is in it, a movie where he gets to make out with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, you can't make out Nicole Kidman without being in High School Musical. I'll tell you that right
Exactly.
now.
May we all be so lucky,
Ah,
really.
truly, truly. Wait, we've gotten so far off.
I
We've gotten
know. Well,
so.
I think something I'm wondering about is how they're going to bring the era of filters and TikTok, and for a book that's about artifice and authenticity, I think it's going to be even more interesting now that we are dealing with those layers of authenticity because you can change your face with a click of a button. Which is interesting because they have that scene, like you were saying, where they're like, what if we make your skin color like a little bit lighter? And what if we do that? And there's a great line in there. Shay says something of like, making ourselves feel ugly is not fun. Which I respected.
I'm very interested because this book, and therefore the movie, right, takes place in an age where, when it was written, all these filters and stuff that we have access to didn't exist. But also, the point in the future where they're existing, there's no need for them.
Right.
Once you turn pretty. So this like rusty city that they go through, which is like reminiscent of New York or Chicago or something like that, that's where all of that would have existed.
Right.
And it is really funny that when they speak about this city, it's like so barbaric. They burned trees for warmth. Their cars rolled on the ground on rubber. And
Yeah.
it's like, but the societal the biology that they keep talking about, right? That we all can't help ourselves from wanting to be pretty and wanting people who are pretty. That all was so prevalent in that rusty era, which is kind of our era now.
Right.
And I'm very interested to see if, because I really hope, what I hate about like coming of age movies now is everything is like so heavy-handed on the phones.
Yes.
Which I know that life is, but when you're watching a movie and you're watching someone in a screen the whole time, it feels so inauthentic to me.
Yeah.
And I'm almost really excited to see this movie that takes place in the future that actually doesn't, it's past the need for those things.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they'll touch on that in the movie or incorporate it, in which
Yeah.
case I'd be bummed, but.
Yeah, I think I was interested in that, like a movie set 300 years in the future. So much of it, first off, took place in the woods. Reading this, I was like, that this would have been like so fun as like on the recess field of like, we're gonna be
Yes.
in the smoke and we're gonna, and you'll be
Yeah.
this and we'll pretend to be on hoverboards. I could see that being so fun. And especially like, I went to the summer camp every single year without fail. And it's like, it's that time of year that would have
Yes.
been summer camp. So that was also a huge part of it.
I didn't have words for what I was like kind of feeling when I was rereading until you just said that, is that there is this like, especially once Shay leaves and decides to not become pretty, when Tally is just in the dorms and she's kind of like to herself because she doesn't know the new people and doesn't want to get friendly with the new people because she's about to turn pretty anyway. There is this monotony that she feels. And actually, Scott does such a really good job. Scott, like we're friends. Scott does such a good job at conveying is there's this dead of summer monotony that comes through so viscerally that like no matter what you did with your summers as a kid, because you don't have access to a car, because you don't like, there is just this monotony to summer that is such a good feeling, but all because you don't have to be at school, but also such like a seemingly endless feeling that I forgot about. Because as adults, you have less of that because you can do whatever you want, really, whenever you. And I think that that's such an interesting springboard because that happens in the first 50 pages of the book. Such an interesting springboard for this kind of story. The Hunger Games kind of does it too, right? The monotony of living in District 12. You only have so many options for your life. I think it's a really interesting springboard.
And that Tally is the youngest and is waiting to kind of catch up with the rest of her world. I think like I was always the youngest person and that
When's
I
your
think
birthday?
December 6, 97.
Were you the oldest in your class or the youngest?
Youngest. I
I'm July
started.
and I was on the youngest end. You were really the youngest.
Yeah, I
So you
wait.
turned 17 during your senior year of high school.
Yeah. It was weird to be in college in my first, like my freshman class at 17. And they're like, you need to sign this piece of paperwork. And being like, I'm a minor
Yeah,
still.
actually, these voter registration things that you're handing out, I can't.
That was the worst thing. I was in my first quarter of college and I got a cold and I could not buy cough medicine because I was 17.
Oh my gosh, because they thought you were going to make meth with it, obviously. When I found out that you have to like buy allergy medication from a pharmacist, I'm like, babe, I'm not going to make meth. I can't breathe.
Yeah.
I can't breathe when I go outside.
Look at me.
I was of the youngest crop of my grade too. I'm a summer birthday. So I always was like the last one to get their license. When you're a kid, it's the worst feeling. So I cannot imagine being literally almost 6 months younger than me and being in
Yeah.
that 6 months as far as the grade goes.
Yeah.
That's wild. But now as an adult, I'm like, oh, I love being the youngest of my peers.
I think it's really interesting to have two actors talk about a book about perception because I think that's the business that we do is how are you
Right.
perceived and how do you appear and like we said like can you play this or that or pass it off as and yeah I don't know that's I posted a video where I was doing like a really monotone voice.
Yeah.
And it w did so much better than anything else I did. And it was like, okay, the videos that do better are the ones that are like Beth, that are like your character on Flash. I did a show a couple months ago where I came in, it was a single line. It was like being a TikTok influencer and like a, and so I did the line and they had some alts and I did it in this funny way that I was ready for. And then the director was like, wait, what if you did it completely flat, like totally monotone, like so serious? And I was like, oh, I
What
know
you
exactly
want.
what you want. Here we go.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting because we're both comedians. And it's really interesting, especially when you're a woman and you're a comedian, what people expect you to talk about and what people expect you to look like. And like, I did so much guess and check work when I started doing stand up of being like, okay, when I wear this, I get more laughs.
Yes.
When I wear this, people don't want to listen to me. Like, I learned when I'm doing comedy to make it look like I have no shape to my body. Cover my body, no shape. Don't put any makeup on. They don't want to look at someone who's put together or societally feminine.
Yeah.
Do comedy unless you're talking about how much, like, I think Nikki Glaser is such a genius because she's like, this is what I look like. I feel good about myself. I'm not changing the way I look to make men and women like feel more comfortable. So she's like, I'm going to talk about what you are going to laugh at. Nikki Glaser is a very smart woman, but so many of her jokes are about sex and her vagina and her period and like all this stuff. And it's because she's like, well, that's what's making me money. And that's what, and it's just so interesting that as I think specifically as a woman, we have to do a lot of that perception work.
100%. 100%.
Stuff. It's very, very interesting. I always say this about my sister too, me and my sister both, is that I really think my sister is so beautiful, but she and I both have this capability, right? And I think it's a superpower, especially with Taylor, because she's so funny. Like, I think I'm funny. I think she is so funny. We both have this capability to make ourselves look so deeply ugly. And we don't have to work hard to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we really can be scary looking. But I also think we can make ourselves look pretty conventionally attractive. And that's a tool, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think everybody who's as beautiful as my sister is able to look as crazy as my sister is able to look. But there is this thing of being a woman in this industry where it's like Joey King, beautiful. She's been beautiful since she's been a kid. She hasn't had an awkward stage, at least not one that we've seen. But she's accepting the lead role in a film called Uglies, where she is supposedly ugly the whole film. And it's like, I'm sure they're going to do makeup and effect to make her look less like herself. But there's something in her face where someone went, she can look ugly.
Yeah.
They didn't pick someone that looks like Madison Beer or like Sabrina Carpenter to play this role. They're not going to pick Olivia Rodrigo to play this role. They don't have the capability to make themselves look like that. I think Joey King, so beautiful, so conventionally beautiful, was told by a board of people, you have the capability to play this ugly girl.
Yeah.
And you have to be so confident in yourself in this industry, especially as a woman, to hear stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. It's rough when other characters are talking negatively about your character's physical appearance.
Yes, and you had that on Flash. Like, there was that on Flash.
So that was hard. But the whole time, I quickly developed this mentality of like, they might be making fun of my looks. They're not making fun of me as a person, as Erin. They're making fun of the character, and I'm getting money.
Oh, babe.
So, like, it has become sort of my slogan of like, I may get cast as Mousy, but at least I'm getting cast. Like, if I babe. Can
cash that check, the check doesn't bounce, cash it.
Exactly.
And I always think about this too. Were you a School of Rock kid? Did you like watch that movie when you were little?
Yes, a couple times, yeah.
I loved that movie. I was obsessed with that movie. And there is a scene in it that I always, from the time I was a kid, I went, man, how did they talk to that kid on set?
Yeah.
There's a scene where Tamika, who's one of the backup singers, is afraid to do the Battle of the Bands audition. And she says, it's because I don't look like the other girls because I'm fat and they're going to make fun of me. And this is like a 12-year-old girl. And she is bigger than the other girls.
Yeah.
And Jack Black has this wonderful scene where he's like, I'm chubby and people love that about me. Because they don't care when I'm on stage, it's my presence, it's my singing, like blah, blah, blah. And he convinces her to do it. But this girl's on set talking about a realistic standard that people are going to thrust upon her when they watch this movie.
Yeah.
And that's a kid. And I want to be like, I hope they had some sort of conversation because we're adults. Nobody's worried about us on set. But like, it really is interesting that like, they didn't have the chubby boy in the movie talk about his weight because he's not defined by that. Nobody thought that about him.
Yeah.
But they made her have that conversation. And it was just like a really beautiful scene. But I was like, man, that kid had to read that and say that about herself. And that kid might actually not have had a confidence issue.
Yeah. But then someone tells you that.
Someone tells you, you should. And other people that look like you do. And it's like, oh.
Oh, no.
Interesting. I'm 12.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't sure that that was something I needed to worry about. Very interesting. But Joey King, I'm sure Joey King is cashing a fat check.
Oh my, she should. I think with Joey King, it's like you are pretty in a, like, you're different way.
She has a very interesting beauty, but she's undeniably a beautiful woman.
Yeah. And in the world of uglies, there's no room for interesting looking people.
That is true.
This book reminded me a lot of, because it feels very sixth grade. And like, I don't know what that how to define that, but that's
Yeah.
the age that it feels rooted in. And sixth grade, it was like one of the first days of school in English class. We had like a very sort of like, I'm not like other teachers kind of English teacher who played the episode of the Twilight Zone for like everyone. It was our first Twilight Zone episode where this woman is covered in bandages. She's like just had plastic surgery. And the big reveal is that like she looks so ugly, but she's our standard of beauty, and everyone else there has like crazy pig faces, and they think she's hideous because she doesn't have the pig face, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so those felt so closely, that episode and this felt really similar.
That is so interesting. And it's true of all different cultures, right? Like, we're talking about a Western beauty standard. We're talking like about a very specific, like Western white beauty standard. But that's not the same standard across the board. He was writing this book for a Western market, but it is so interesting that like my sister taught English in China for a while and loved it. She was there for like 6 months, but she said people would kind of gawk at her because, first of all, she's like almost 6 feet tall. She's so fair. And she's got these like big doe eyes. And, you know, I think everybody consumes American media, but I also think she existed kind of outside of this beauty standard that they have there and kind of outside of this like beauty norm that they have there. So she was like, people would ask to take pictures with me. And she's like, and it didn't always feel like it was in a good way, you know? Like, and so I do think that that's really interesting and a humbling thing to keep in mind when it feels like, because even as an adult, like it feels sometimes like, oh man, you can't ever measure up. You can't ever. There's no way to do it. So it is actually kind of like a humbling and nice thing to remember that that's just in this part of the world. Some other part of the world, the hottest person is like the hottest person here is not what they value there. So that's interesting too.
And that there's it feels so odd, I think just because of the language and Scott, but when she meets David and she's and sort of starts falling in love with him, he has never had the surgery, he's been raised, he's like the only person that's ever been raised outside of the society, and she slowly, it's not that slowly, but she suddenly like, he has the ugly characteristics, but I'm finding them pleasing. And I'm feeling warm and tingly, but his nose is large. It's an interesting sort of, I don't know. I feel like Scott doesn't quite land the plane, but introduces a lot of really interesting ideas that I think, like, with your other sixth grade friends, like on the bus home from school, can start some really interesting discussions.
It's true. It's true. And I do think what a takeaway, and this is something that I was very aware of the first time I read the book too, it was this takeaway of like, they mentioned very quick, only a handful of people in the history of this new society have ever been born pretty. And we all know those people. And that's not me. That's not like, we would all be for some reason considered ugly in their society. These beautiful people are like, we all went to school with one of those girls. And it was not us. It was one of those girls who was just like, looks like she was born with plastic surgery face because she's so perfect. And it is interesting to think like everybody I've ever fallen in love with or thought was so attractive would be considered ugly in the society, which is goes back to that line that Shay said, where it's like when everybody's ugly, nobody is. It's all just everybody's different, which I think is so interesting. LA is a little different. LA is a little bit more homogenous as far as.
I'm also interested to see there's sort of a, I'm really trying to scroll less. My boyfriend recently was like, instead of opening Instagram, open Pinterest and scroll Pinterest. And I was like, that is actually genius. That I am suddenly, instead of seeing like news, I'm seeing a lot of pictures of like cosmic brownies. And that's a
Yes,
net
and
plus.
it sends off the same dopamine receptor in your
It
head.
really does. But I've noticed there's this conversation evolving with Kylie Jenner, who I believe is my age. There's something of like she's going out still in masks and is only letting herself be seen if it is like by curated photographers that are approved and things like that. And that the conversation is this girl has started getting work done from such a young age that she's starting to look messed up at less than 30. And I think that is a conversation that is starting to happen. Of people getting cosmetic surgery when
Their faces
the
aren't done forming.
exactly. And so I'm interested to see if that plays into it or if that is like that's a 2024 concept and we didn't really have it in 2021 when we shot the film. I don't
I don't think it's a 2024. I mean, it's
know.
definitely, I'm hearing it talked about. My sister, for those of you who are listening, is obsessed with knowing who has what plastic surgery. She doesn't have plastic surgery, but she loves to just like know what people are doing to their face. It's like fascinating to her. It's like how I feel, how most of us feel about like murder documentaries. And she'll tell you, she can look at somebody and tell you what they look at two pictures of them and tell you what exactly what they've done to their face. And she's been talking about this for years of like, and you see it on somebody like Hailey Bieber too, who's had lip filler from the time she was like a teenager. And it migrates through your face. Like the plastic surgeries that are being done now, the types of filler that are being done now, and when I say now, I mean in like the last 10 years, are not what was being done to Courteney Cox, or not what was being done to like all these people who got like pillow faces in the 90s and early 2000s, which we obviously are like, that was so horrible. And they all look so horrible. And it's like, yeah, but they were doing then what we're doing now. Our perception of what is beautiful has changed, but they made permanent decisions back then. I think the fads of what is beautiful is a really interesting experiment that unfortunately some people are making on their own faces. But I do think in this book, he's kind of made that a bulletproof situation by being like, and we live in this closed society, and somebody has decided what's beautiful and then has brainwashed everybody and literally burned their brain to believe that that's right. So I think he's kind of been like, and we don't got to worry about that.
It's a throwaway line that there is a committee for like every country that
Oh,
decides what pretty
yes.
is. I really want that. Tally is not an interesting character to me.
No.
There's like a big moment when David is sort of like professing his love to her, and he's saying sort of like why he fell for her. And all of the reasons are like because things were done to her rather than innate characteristics. You always seem to know how dangerous it was here in the smoke. You understood what the cities were really like, even before my parents told you the truth about the operation. You were the only runaway I ever met who really got it. And it's like, that's because other people did that to her and like put that knowledge on her. And I forget what point ultimately I was making, but it's not coming back.
That's okay. But also, that is such a, I think that's such a, do they tell you how old he is in the book? I was trying to like,
I don't think so. I think that the assumption is also 16 because
he
that's
seems
what.
older to me. I always read him as older, not like 20s older, but maybe like 18. Which when you're
Yeah, I believe
16 and
that.
18, that feels like, oh my God, he's so much older than me. But yeah, that is, I will say the dynamics, and that is an example of it, are so very high school, which I actually think is really sweet when it's on this background of kind of like, not an apocalyptic thing, but like kind of a dystopian
Yeah, certainly.
future kind of situation, to have like two teenagers falling in love with the idea of each other in like a circumstance because it's kind of probably convenient that they're both there. You know, like I think that's actually kind of sweet.
Yeah, it's the persistence of humanity through all the different.
Exactly. I love that.
And I love that the impetus for the downfall of society. I've been reading Station 11 while reading Uglies, which are both post-apocalyptic narratives that are surprisingly have some similarities. But what happened in this universe is that there's like a virus in the oil. And so cars stop working and planes stop working and all of those things. And I just thought that was really smart, Scott. I really didn't expect that. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Good on ya.
That was really smart, Scott.
Good job, Scott.
Scott thought of a lot of things. He really did.
And I love that, like, they have their first kiss. It's like huge. He's about to, and all this stuff. And then he ends a chapter, David ends a chapter by going, I'd like you to meet my parents.
Classic. And she's like, nailed it. Nailed it.
My first boy, I'm already there. And there's a line, oh, I can't find it. That's like there is a line that is the effect to the effect of you don't know you're beautiful, and that's what makes you beautiful.
Oh, the One Direction moment, which when you're 16, when I was 16 and or I was like 18 when that song came out, I was like, oh, thank you. And
The
now I'm like,
highest of
oh, you
compliments,
don't love a comp, you just don't want a confident woman. Oh, to be 16.
And like you said, that's what you think the height of romance is. I think I was interested in how one of the major conversations in the book, I think, seems to be about growing up. and the mental changes that the surgery causes you to have, everyone sort of equates to like, well, no, you're just a grown up now, and now you don't care about like all this crazy. Shay gets her makeover and comes back and is just sort of like, you kids, you silly kids, caring about boys, thinking you can rebel. I thought that was interesting.
It is, because that's also the only fight you see Shay and Tally get in the beginning of, like, when Tally's yelling at Shay that she wants to run away because she's afraid to grow up. And it's also funny because everything they tell you about the pretties, other than what the pretties themselves are saying, is that there is a childlike quality to them. They're docile, they're submissive, there is something like childlike about their faces. They're infantilized by the exposition, if not by the dialogue. I think it's very much a comment, obviously, on society. Like, it's the glorification of the sexy baby. And I do think that that's part of the allure they're trying to create for those who aren't pretty yet, of being like, this is what adult life is. It's so fancy, it's so frivolous, but it is really just like you're playing all the time.
And there's a tiny moment in the end where Shay goes, having a criminal, I have this line like memorized, like having a criminal backstory gets you into all the best parties in the pretty world. And I'm like, so even when you're all equally pretty, some of you are not being allowed in the same parties. So the same issues are happening even now. I'm looking at, well,
Because the human condition will,
we'll
humanity will
separate.
always prevail.
Exactly. And you talking about the sexy baby thing, it just immediately my mind went to you talking about doing comedy is most successful when you're shapeless. And like I'm 5 feet tall and very small and can pass for very young. And I had my hair up in pigtails the other day, and suddenly I was like, am I deceiving people? Like, is there something that I am doing?
It's funny. So I, for a while, I was waiting tables at a diner in Times Square. So it was very, very busy. And it was hot. Like in there, it was so hot all the time. And I was working there like several days a week. And I would just come in with my hair in a ponytail. And I felt like crap all the time. I was like, I just look shitty. I like whatever. So I started like braiding my hair some days, but some days I would wear my hair in like too high ponytails. But I think the difference, and this is society's perception, because you and I are doing our hair the same way for the same reason, of being like, this is a cute hairstyle. This is fun. Society looks at you and is like, is that a kid? Wait, is that a kid? Society looks like me and goes, that's an adult trying to look like a baby. And it's always sexualized. I did not have my hair like that one time without a man making, that's so I don't wear it that way anymore, making some kind of comment about why did you do that? Did you do it because I go, or I want to hold on to them, or like whatever. There's like adult women infantilizing themselves. First of all, is like people think feminism is like women like wanting to have jobs and like go to the gym sometimes and like pay their own taxes, which men can pay my taxes. I don't care about that. But it's really like, no, sometimes I just want to have my hair in sexy baby pigtails without you asking me about my sexy baby pigtails. But it is very funny of like, that's the perception thing is like, well, I don't perceive myself that way because I know why I put my hair up, because I have to put my hair up because it's so hot and I don't want to have like an Alexander Hamilton ponytail every day. So let me try this cute other hairstyle. But society's perception is like, she's doing something for me. This is something that's being done for me. And I'm perceiving it as this trope that we've lauded as an option for women, which is the sexy baby thing.
And I was going to say, like, the difference between you and me, I think mostly, is our height. So, like, you were
I'm like
the.
5'9".
And so that's like, you're doing sexy baby, but suddenly it's intimidating where I do sexy baby and it's like, you're still baby sides. You're
Yeah,
not
they're
going
like,
to
look how
hurt
cute.
me. Exactly. But at the same time, I also don't really go outside a whole lot. So maybe people don't comment on it because simply no one's around. So that has to be taken into account.
I also like LA, even when you're outside, and I noticed this so quickly. I didn't realize it when I moved to LA, but I realized it when I moved back to New York. There's a wonderful quality of solitude about LA, even though it's a city and it is very social and very busy. You're in your house or your apartment, and then when you're traveling, you're in a car. So when you're being social, it is so intentional. In New York, it is social from the moment you step out of your door. So people have something to think or something to say about what you're looking like or what you're doing from the second you leave the door in the morning, which is so jarring to come back to after having the inverse. So your perception of yourself really only exists in your apartment in New York because then it belongs to everybody else. Whereas in LA, you get to kind of choose more where that happens.
Yeah.
You might be at a bar with your friends and somebody, some asshole, like says something, but which you can't stop that from happening anywhere. But it is like really contained, I feel like, in LA, whereas society is just everywhere in New York.
I had never thought about it like that, but you're so right. I think of New York as very like claustrophobic, and I
Yes.
think that's partly just because of how, yeah, like you said, how many people there are.
And they're everywhere, and everyone's outside. Go inside. I can't believe I had this much to say about this book written by our pal Scott.
I finished it and I was like, I'm not crazy about this book, but I think I have found like a lot of value in it if it was what you had, you know?
Have you read anything else in this series? Okay, so not that you're going to continue, because I'll tell you right now, don't tell Scott. It's not worth it. But Pretties is the best book in the series.
Okay.
It's the best book in the series. It's where a lot of these things that are like set up in Uglies are really like dismantled or leaned into. And a lot of like experimentation of like the science of this world that we haven't like super gotten all the answers for happens. And so I really like that book because it feels very like, as a kid, it felt very
Yeah.
like tactical. But yeah, this first one, I didn't realize, because I was obsessed with this book, I didn't realize until I reread it, I was like, oh, this book feels like a giant setup
It does.
for a
It really
punchline that
does.
never happened.
Absolutely. And I think that was something I didn't notice until the end portions where I was like, oh, I'm most interested in what's happening in Pretty Town that I'm not seeing. But I guess it's in the name that they're ugly, so we're gonna be with them.
I know, I just
But
wanted so bad to go to Pretty Town. I was like, how do I get in? Where do I get the operation? It sounds so fun.
would you consider required reading?
Has anyone said no on this podcast before?
A few times. It's a no from me.
I'm gonna say it's a no, but I would recommend it to a kid.
Yeah.
I would absolutely recommend it to a kid. Also, because I think that it tackles a lot of the same themes, like overarching themes, as something like The Hunger Games, without kind of the violence
Yeah.
as much as The Hunger Games. And so I would definitely recommend this to like a kid who's
Yeah.
interested, like who like wants to broaden their horizons, but like maybe is a little too young to be like seeing kids murder each other. So I
Right.
do think it has a spot in the canon of young adult literature, but no, I would not call it required reading.
I agree. But I'm glad I read it and I had fun and this was
Yeah.
such a good chat.
It's a very easy read. It's a very quick. I got it in the mail and I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I finished it in like 3 days. But I saw it and I was like, no, what did I agree to?
Is there
Yeah.
anything you'd like to plug?
Oh God. Come see Wicked before the movie comes out.
Cozy
Come
Wicked.
see Wicked. And
Amazing.
watch Welcome to Flash. Buy it on Amazon. Buy it on iTunes. It's so funny. And then write a letter to Fox and get them to make season three.
I want like a spinoff where it's Beth and Mandy touring the country, learning
I want
about
that too.
things. Yeah.
Beth, Mandy, and Chantal.
I
Just Chantal.
one of my Because I went into Flash with like a lot of insecurities because I had never acted
It was
before.
brand new, yeah.
Yeah. Also like having issues with like my medication during season one, all sorts of stuff. So one time I texted Taylor a meme of like a baby holding a gun and I sent it to Taylor and said, imagine Chantal is this. And Taylor texted back and she said, I was just talking about how much I love you and you sent me this and it's hilarious. And I was like, wow, things are gonna be okay.
Yeah, our brains really will absolutely. So here's the message, listeners, is just send the meme of the baby with the shotgun. Send it to
You never
whoever is like top of
know.
mind. You never know what they'll say.
Exactly. Send the baby with the shotgun.
Yeah.
And that's all. Thank you so much for listening. This was a really fun one, don't you think? Next week, Kevin T. Porter joins us to discuss the second book in the Wayside series, Wayside School is Falling Down. If you would like to support the show, please go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. If you send me your address when you donate, I'll mail you a letter saying thank you. What else? Oh, I wrote a list to tell me. We mentioned it a few times. Yeah, there's an Uglies movie coming. It's coming out, I think, September 13th. Around. I could give it a Google, but I'm not going to. Oops.
That's all for this week. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. I'm Erin. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. The R actually stands for Robertson. In case you didn't know.